Hello and welcome to the F1 Strategy Report for Apex Race Manager, the mobile management simulator. My name's Michael Laminato, and on this week's edition, the Austrian Grand Prix, is Valtteri Bottas a genuine title contender? And what does this mean for Kimi Raikkonen? That's all to come on this edition of the Strategy Report.
Well, we're sitting just outside the Red Bull Ring. The sun's going down. I could say the hills are alive, but everybody says that for this race, so you already know where we are. Yes, it's the Austrian Grand Prix Strategy Report, and joining me now from NBC Sport is Luke Smith. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. It's not exactly the race we anticipated, but the implications of this race are actually really, really exciting for the championship.
Yeah, it's been huge. We've seen Sebastian Vettel finish second, obviously behind Valtteri Bottas, so it was not really the result that Vettel would have wanted, but with Lewis Hamilton having his grid penalty only finishing fourth, it's given him a 20-point buffer at the top. But yes, the main man, Bottas, a great victory for him, now only 35 points off the lead. So he's now looking like a pretender in this title fight, which I think before nobody really thought he was.
Yeah, and before we go into the details of how that happened, it is sort of, I guess, the generally accepted outlook going into this race that as long as Vettel finished in front of Hamilton, who did take that grid place penalty for a gearbox change, it'd be okay, because he's the championship rival. But do you think after this race, seeing that Bottas won it, seeing that he is closer to Hamilton than Hamilton is to Vettel, which is an interesting championship permutation, that maybe Vettel will be thinking, oh, maybe it would have been really, maybe trying that extra 1% if there was anything left in the tank to pass Bottas at the end of this race?
Yeah, I definitely think he'll be well, maybe not regretting it, but he'll definitely have that on his mind. I think we're going out of this race weekend, it is important to obviously look at all of the potential rivals for a title. We saw in 2007, obviously, with Kimi Raikkonen coming around the outside and winning against Alonso and Hamilton. We saw in 2010, even with Vettel himself, it was meant to be a Weber-Alonso showdown, and he stole the show. So, yeah, I think now he'll definitely be looking at Bottas perhaps a bit more seriously. It was important, I think, for Vettel's day to beat Hamilton. As he did, he certainly took advantage of Hamilton's grid penalty, but without winning the race, Bottas has really, really sort of crashed their, I think, two-man party and made it a three-way fight now.
Yeah, very exciting for us, and we all look forward to seeing how that unfolds. But let's look at the context of this weekend. Very briefly, last round out in Azerbaijan, all the talk was about that clash behind the safety car. There was no follow-on penalty for Sebastian Vettel, but in this, I suppose, continuing irony for Lewis Hamilton, who finished behind Vettel in Azerbaijan, had to take this gearbox penalty, so didn't have really the opportunity to bounce back in perhaps the way he would have liked in Austria to, let's say, just say qualify ahead of Vettel and then beat him in the Grand Prix. What I thought was interesting, though, is that Mercedes knew this penalty was coming on Tuesday but didn't tell anybody until Friday. People are saying, well, maybe that's because Ferrari in their practice program wouldn't have known. So there's a little bit of that. I guess that's an aspect we don't necessarily think about, is that off-the-track strategy that teams can play mind games, maybe we like to call them.
Yeah, there's definitely that gamesmanship, I think. I think Mercedes, they don't want to give away any extra information or Ferrari any extra advantage than they can get. And, I think by definitely not announcing that Hamilton had this penalty until the Friday, it meant the Ferrari sort of went into the practice programme with their regular sort of gusto and, I guess, their regular push. Whereas had they known about Hamilton, they would, I think, perhaps been plotting a little bit earlier how they were going to play the weekend and how to beat Hamilton, not just fighting them straight head on. So it was definitely interesting to hear that move from Mercedes. It was tough for Lewis Hamilton that he didn't get the chance to, I think, fight back against Vettel as he would have liked, but it definitely added an extra sort of bit of intrigue to the race, having his fight back through the field.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things we haven't seen for a while in this year, we saw a lot last year with Pirelli's tyres, and then generally the selection was very good. We had obviously the introduction of the three tyre rule and all the tyres more or less suited the circuit very well. So far this year they've been very hard, but in Austria we sort of had this situation where they were almost too soft, which is extremely unusual. It didn't exactly transpire like that during the race, but on Friday all the teams seemed very concerned they'd brought too many ultra softs, because they brought almost only ultra softs and they just weren't working around this circuit. Now there might have been rain which might have helped them out, but I mean, that's sort of like a bit panic stations, and the strategy thinking after that would have been really interesting for these teams, considering the soft has been run hardly at all this year.
Yeah, definitely. It was, I think, going into the race, Vettel and Bottas, they hadn't even touched the soft tyre, and it was kind of the idea of would they have to be using using it? Would they have any experience on it? Would they have any sort of confidence in what they were doing? So having the three compounds, obviously we've seen Pirelli this year, they've been a bit more conservative with their tyres. All three were very, very close this weekend in terms of performance. So it was definitely a bit of a strategic conundrum for all of the teams, really. There didn't really seem to be one right answer going into the race. I think Pirelli said that their ideal strategy would be to go from super soft to the soft. I think one driver in the field actually completed that, Nico Hülkenberg, but otherwise everyone else went a different way. And obviously that ideal strategy doesn't even use the option tyre, so the qualifying tyre, the ultra soft. So it was a weird sort of situation, I think, that even with these sort of three super, well, the ultra super and soft tyres, they still weren't soft enough.
Yeah, which is unusual, I suppose, unusual from a strategy point of view. And I suppose the final context to this race was that we thought perhaps after Azerbaijan, Ferrari had fallen a little bit off the pace of Mercedes, maybe with that, you know, we call the oil burn controversy that happened after Azerbaijan. Very small controversy, though, for Formula One standards. Not the case, but not only that, Red Bull Racing, for the first time at a home Grand Prix, actually seemed relatively competitive from qualifying, and indeed, Daniel Ricciardo ended up finishing on the podium pretty much on merit. Not too many unusual things happened for him to get there, which does bode well, as much as Bottas during the championship fight, for the Constructors' Championship.
Yeah, definitely. Red Bull had a really, really good home race today. Ricciardo, obviously, a podium's a great result. I think even bigger was the fact he was only 6 seconds off Bottas at the checker flag. So that really showed, I think, the progress that Red Bull has made, the steps they've been able to make, and the work they've been doing throughout this season to go from 45 seconds off the pace in Australia to just 6 in Austria. It's been a really, really impressive, I think, display from them to do that. So, definite progress from them. The home race, not really been a happy one over the last few years, but today it was a great showing from them.
Absolutely, and we got, I guess, for the second time only in this race's, it was modern race's history, let's say, at the Red Bull Ring's history, a Red Bull car on the podium, which was certainly good news for the main sponsor, the bankroller of this event. If we go to the race itself, though, relatively straightforward affair. There are things, of course, to talk about. I think the most interesting thing, though, was Valtteri Bottas's start, which I think Sebastian Vettel described as not human, but Finnish. So there's a fine border there. He actually thought it was a jump start. It was looked at as a jump start, but 0.2 of a second reaction time from Valtteri Bottas, which was very impressive.
Yeah, very impressive indeed. It did spark a lot of, obviously Vettel said over the radio, he said Charlie's got to look at this, and there was that belief it was a jump start, but no, it was just that good. He was just that quick. And Bottas said after the race, it was sort of, you train your practice starts and you sort of find that sort of balance between risk and reward. You always gamble a little bit for when you think the lights are going to go. He said recently he's been able to sort of get roughly about when the lights have been able to change. So he was able to really, really perfect his start, and it was a bit lucky, definitely, but he got it right and he was well within the law. So a really, really good bit of technique from him there.
And that set him up for the win, obviously, which he ultimately went on to do. He got a little bit of pressure from Sebastian Vettel at the very end of the race, which we'll get to momentarily. But what I suppose set up the results for the midfield, in particular Williams, who had an atrocious weekend really up until the race when they actually scored double points, which is impressive for them, was this crash. Daniel Kvyat caused a crash. He hit Fernando Alonso, who then hit Max Verstappen. So two Red Bull cars essentially out of contention at Red Bull's home race. Max Verstappen went out right in front of all the Dutch fans as well, just outside turn one there. But this enabled Williams and Jolyon Palmer to jump up to the points, where they all tried different strategies, which didn't really have much of an effect, which is something we've seen with the tyres today, is that even the ultra soft, super soft, and the soft all more or less performed in the same band, depending on the car. The temperature was, I guess, moderate around the whole circuit, and they ended up scoring points almost by accident.
Yeah, definitely. It was quite a bit of luck, I think, for Williams to fight back after such poor qualifying and struggling with the updates on the FW40 this weekend. They were able to obviously capitalise on that incident at the start, but then stay there. Lance Stroll said on Saturday he thought the race pace of the Williams would be much better. It was. On the strategy side, they both tried different strategies, and there wasn't really one right answer. That was the thing. I think, again, it just showed how close these compounds were, how it was really a case of just being, I guess, just looking after your tires and being able to push at the right point. But on the whole, yeah, there wasn't really anything between them. So it was a good display from Williams, a good fight back, definitely. But it was more, I think, down to a bit of luck off the line than any strategic genius, I think.
I think so, yeah. Now, Massa, one of only two drivers to start on the soft tire. A couple started on the super soft, including Lance Stroll, who tried a different strategy. Some of these strategies were anticipation of rain. We all thought rain was coming. We had multiple weather updates. The rain never arrived. Actually, it did arrive just after the race when everyone started leaving the circuit, unfortunately. But one driver who did start on the super soft was Lewis Hamilton. He did this deliberately from qualifying two, when you choose the tire you start the race on. And this actually did pay dividends for him. He was very downcast about it after qualifying. He said, oh, you know, it's a bit slower than the ultra soft. It might go a bit longer. He didn't take it any longer, but it did mean he could finish on the ultra soft, which led to this really exciting battle for the podium between him and Daniel Ricciardo, with Hamilton on a marginally faster tyre and Ricciardo having to put his elbows out, as his pit wall told him to do, which actually brought the race alive, even if only for five laps.
Yeah, definitely. It was a really, really good fight between them at the end. We saw Hamilton sort of gaining time hand over fist in the closing stages. He was able to really push and get the undercut on the ultra soft after his earlier stop, and that brought him into contention with the likes of Ricciardo. Obviously got him ahead of Raikkonen as well, and he really looked after the tire well. He was sort of complaining about issues here and there, but even towards the end he was lighting the timesheets purple, so he was really, really on pace. And it was definitely an interesting strategy. I think the fact he went shorter than any of the ultra soft leaders, despite being on a tire that was meant to go a lot longer, kind of summed up the sort of weird tire situation we had this weekend, where there wasn't they were all kind of similar and there wasn't really one set rule for how to play your strategy.
Pirelli's tried so hard to get out of that black round Pirelli mindset. Turns out they are just black round and Pirelli branded, so that's just the way it is for them. What was interesting here, though, we talk about Hamilton having a slightly unusual strategy that got him up into fourth place from eighth. He had to pass two cars, then benefit from Verstappen crashing out, and then undercut Kimi Raikkonen, which really set up, I think, a really interesting, I suppose, way forward for Ferrari at this point in the championship. We talked about Valtteri Bottas's win putting him into contention of the title. I think Kimi Raikkonen, I mean, we all know he's pretty much out of this championship challenge unless something really unusual happens. But for the first time this year, we've seen Ferrari very actively use him as a, I don't want to use the word weapon because that's been thrown around for all sorts of reasons in Formula 1 the last couple of weeks, but as a strategic aid, because they left him out to the detriment of his strategy in an attempt to hold up Valtteri Bottas. Didn't work in the end, he wasn't quick enough, but I mean, that's really a change of the dynamic of this season so far. This has sort of cemented it as a three-horse championship race rather than potentially a four.
Certainly. We saw, obviously, Raikkonen had that moment in Monaco where he got pole, and I think there was maybe some thoughts that, hey, Kimi can come back. He can get maybe in this title fight, maybe try and have some say in it. But now I think this weekend he wasn't on the pace really. Sergio Marchionne, Ferrari chairman and CEO, said that he was a bit laggard, and he had to
laggard
meaning sort of slow to progress, slow to learn, and he had to show a bit more commitment. And I think that really showed that ultimately Ferrari, they can't see Raikkonen getting in this title fight. They can't see him winning it himself. They can't see him really taking points off the likes of Bottas and Hamilton. So really the main thing is just to help Vettel as much as possible. That's what they tried today with that long strategy. Plan was initially to respond to Hamilton, but they decided not to, I think probably looking at the situation with Bottas. I think that sums up where Ferrari is now. They're not looking at Raikkonen as a title contender at all. They're looking at him as a number two to Vettel, and if he can't do that, I think there's going to be real serious questions about his long-term future.
Well, I was going to say, so this 44 stint on the ultra soft, which was his opening stint, ultimately undid his position in this race. They tried to use him to hold up Bottas, didn't work. He's fifth in the race, fifth in the Constructors' Championship as well, behind Daniel Ricciardo, who has won a race. Raikkonen obviously hasn't won any races. The Constructors' Championship tally is suffering as a result against Mercedes. Ferrari is well behind there now, especially after Bottas has won. I mean, Raikkonen's been renewed a good few times, his contract, one-year deal supposedly to motivate him. Surely there won't be another one, considering Ferrari is very much in the championship fight, Constructors' Championship fight, and may well lose it because he's underperforming.
I'm not sure. I think that the big thing going for Raikkonen is his good relationship with Vettel. I think that is massive. I think we've got to recognise this is now Vettel's team, and he is the number one. Vettel said on Thursday he'd much rather have Kimi as a teammate than Fernando Alonso coming, for example. Mm-hmm. I would be wary about who else is out there to actually do a better job than Raikkonen does. I mean, ultimately, if you bring in a Grosjean or a Perez, for me, they would take time to get up to speed. They'd take time to sort of adapt to life in Ferrari. And I think that could actually end up being a longer process and maybe not a long-term thing they could really do. So perhaps for them, it's a case of sticking with Raikkonen until they can find a long-term option, whether that is a Daniel Ricciardo or a Max Verstappen, mm-hmm. or if they want to put their money on Antonio Giovinazzi or Charles Leclerc. I'm not sure, but I think that they've got to be 100% sure about who they're bringing in as a better alternative to Raikkonen. Yes, he may end up costing them the constructor season. Yes, he may end up costing Vettel the championship of the season. But you've got to question, would a Grosjean or a Perez do any differently?
It's an interesting prospect. I mean, there's a lot to think about. Team Harmony, certainly one of them. The idea of adapting to Ferrari, probably the hardest team to adapt to in Formula One, given the various politics of the sport in Italy and inside Ferrari itself. But, I mean, the championship picture at the end of the season will be very interesting to analyse from that point of view. Mercedes has long had, I guess, more or less a two number one driver policy. Certainly with Hamilton and Rosberg, that was the case. Now with Bottas, you'd assume that has to be the case. How that's going to stack up, I mean, it's been a while since Ferrari, even in its championship winning days, really had to face up to that kind of pressure. In some respects, it's a little bit of a new concept or a new championship fight for Formula One. It's not usual we have two teams with potentially two number one drivers in it. It's a different kind of idea.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, before we've always seen sort of the set number one. We saw Schumacher, Hakkinen at McLaren. Mm-hmm. They were the set number ones. Closest we probably came was sort of 07, 08 with McLaren and Ferrari. And yeah. When we had, Hamilton, Alonso together and Massa and Raikkonen together. But even then you kind of, Ferrari, you sort of saw Raikkonen coming to the fore, I think. So, mm-hmm. I think it's... It's interesting. It's good, though. It's good to have this open fight. It's good to have these sort of... There's no set policy from Mercedes, especially. I think Ferrari, they're putting their money on Vettel, rightly so. But I think... it's good for F1. I think it's good to have that variation. Mm-hmm. It's good to have... Just as having two number one drivers in two separate teams fighting each other can get a bit dull, as can having two drivers within the same team, Hamilton Rosberg, we had recently. Same thing. So if we have this different dynamic, as you say, it adds some extra spice to the championship, mm-hmm. certainly.
And there are two midfield fights I want to talk about before we do wrap this up. And that is, first of all, Jolyon Palmer. Maybe not so much a fight, but I want to talk about his prospects in this race. Came very close to scoring his first point, but did not. He started on the soft and ended the race on the ultra soft. It was a one-stop strategy, stopped around about the middle of the Grand Prix. Did pressure Stroll towards the end of the race, but just couldn't get it done. They were both on the same tyre. This was a race he sort of led for Renault. Hülkenberg dropped to 15th after that crash at the start, where he sort of had to drive around it. And then thereafter, he had a very long last stint on the soft. Didn't really deliver the performance to move him up the grid. I mean, this is sort of what Cyril Abitbol, the director at Renault, was saying, is that in situations where Hülkenberg's out for the count, Palmer doesn't necessarily fill the breach in the way you would expect him to. Do you think this performance, because he did okay this weekend, he qualified not so far behind Hülkenberg, finished just outside of the points with reasonable pace. Do you think this is enough to sort of satisfy that, or do you still think he's very much in danger? Granted, it's only one Grand Prix this has happened.
Yeah, he's definitely in danger. I think it's one race. He said that this weekend sort of his breakthrough, much as Canada was last year, but again, breakthrough, and he's still outqualified by Hülkenberg. He's still not in the points. You've kind of got a question what actually needs to fall his way. All of the other midfield runners this year, they've sort of had the one chance to get up there and they've made the most of it. Maybe this is Palmer's chance. I don't know. But Renault, they don't want drivers who nearly score points. They don't want drivers who nearly make it through to Q2. They want drivers who are in the points regularly, who can really take a race by the scruff of the neck. Palmer, he got up a load of positions at the start due to the clash, but then didn't make any passes, didn't really make any inroads, nearly caught Stroll at the end, but again, it's not impressive. And I think he's really got to up his game, I think, starting at Silverstone and push on, because he's in real trouble.
And I want to look briefly at Williams, because they've had what I'm willing to describe as a bit of a Williams weekend, because generally they perform quite well, and then all of a sudden this strange weekend comes along where they don't perform and they don't really know why. Normally these results come at places like Monaco, although they kind of know why they don't perform at Monaco, but they more or less write those weekends off because the car just doesn't perform there. This time in Austria, the car was so underperforming that they couldn't even figure out why. Throughout all three practice sessions, even after qualifying when they locked out the second last row of the grid, considering only a couple of years ago they locked out the front row of the grid, quite a change. They jumped up because of that crash, but I emphasise because of that crash. And what I thought was very interesting was that both finished on the ultra soft tyre, in particular Massa, who then was trying to challenge Esteban Ocon, who drives a Force India and is therefore one of Williams' chief rivals, or their chief rival in the Constructors' Championship. But the problems that affected them in qualifying, that one lap pace, meant he just couldn't do it. I mean, how big a limitation was it, this car, at this round, for them to be able to do anything? Like we were saying, the tyres seemed to make no difference. Having that fresh tyre at the very end seemed to make no difference. It was a bit of a nothing race, I suppose, for them, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Stroll was saying how the updates were... they gave Williams a step, which I found quite surprising because, yeah, we didn't see it, really. Mm-hmm. And he was saying how it was just a lack of grip. That was a problem for them working with the tyres. Again, it's been a problem for all of the teams. He said the elevation as well made it difficult with the car. And, yeah, it's a weird one. They were definitely sort of better in the race, but... Mm-hmm. If they really want to take the fight to Force India for fourth place in the Constructors, which they absolutely should be, they need to be, I think, performing better. Obviously, qualifying so low down isn't a good way to start, and to be beaten by, to have Haas finishing as sort of the best of the rest behind mm-hmm. the other teams, it sort of shows where Williams is. It's they're in a weird spot right now where I think they've just got to try and make the best of it, but there's no real consistency. The Stroll goes from a terrible start of the season to mm-hmm. three straight points finishes. He goes from the podium in one race to start in 18th in the next, and I think Williams just needs to find a bit of consistency, a bit of continuity, and then they'll probably start to find their feet a bit more this season.
What's been interesting about this year, and this race I think is a good example of it, is that the midfield in particular has been a bit all over the place, but in a good way, in a way where they perform differently on different weekends. You mentioned there, for example, Haas had an excellent weekend. Grosjean finished 6th and qualified 6th as well, and Kevin Magnussen could have done the same, but he just had an awful weekend mechanical wise. There's so much variation in this midfield. The points are sort of a little bit separate at this point in time, but the performances are all sort of there. I mean, how much pressure is on midfield teams in situations like this to really capitalize and score points, knowing that on any given weekend, more or less 6th or 7th place could be up for grabs for any of them?
It definitely adds to the pressure. I think it's a case of capitalising and taking advantage of the opportunity as it arises. We saw Williams do that, obviously, with Stroll hitting the podium in Baku. Saw Haas do that this weekend. Grosjean was absolutely fantastic, didn't put a foot wrong, no brake problems, and he was all good to take a pretty lonely 6th at the end of the race. So it was I think the midfield this season is so close that if you miss one of these opportunities, as I think Renault did in Baku with Hülkenberg's crash mm-hmm. and obviously Palmer's poor luck, it can come and bite back. And I think at the end of the season, when there's a few points deciding it, that'll be crucial.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the way it's shaping up. And we're already seeing, for example, Renault underscoring, despite the fact they should have a car that can score points. How that shakes out at the end of the season will be genuinely interesting. The next round is Silverstone, 1 week away, which, again, another an interesting challenge aerodynamics-wise, power-wise. Who do you expect should be performing, judging by this sort of precursor to the race at Silverstone?
I think Ferrari will be strong there. I think the car's been pretty good everywhere, to be honest. I think, we're going to see Mercedes obviously be fighting again. I think if they can carry over their form from Baku and really take mm-hmm. that to Silverstone, I think that would be definitely a good show. And see what Red Bull can do. I mean, is it track-specific? Is it a long-term thing that they are really in this fight now? Can they get in the mix at the front? It'll be exciting. I think it's going to be close.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thunder's rolling in. We're seeing lightning clouds. Yeah. All that thunderstorm we were talking about today, I think, is finally about to happen here in Spielberg. Certainly the trucks are rolling out. They want to get onto the road as fast as possible. Luke Smith, it's been a pleasure to wrap up this Austrian Grand Prix. Interesting Austrian Grand Prix, let's say that with you.
Brilliant. Thank you, Michael. Cheers.
That was the strategy report for the 2017 Austrian Grand Prix. But if you want to read more about the strategy from this week's race, go to f1strategyreport.com for the pit stop stats, tyre data, and Jack Leslie's write-up of all the action from Spielberg. The strategy report is powered by the 2017 edition of Apex Race Manager, the number one new racing game in Germany, Italy, and Australia. You can download Apex Race Manager for free for iOS and Android devices. My name's Michael Laminato. You can find me at Michael Laminato on Twitter, and I'll catch you next week when we look back at the British Grand Prix.